Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast, produced by OOT Social Health, where the focus is on exploring the essential elements that drive organizational success, human-centric leadership. Hosted by Adjoa Boahidi, principal of AKB Talent Edge.
Neil Hunter's non-linear career path really speaks to me, and it also is driven with purpose and philosophy. Currently, Neil is Chief Learning Officer and partner at Deloitte. And he's held many roles before that in oil and gas, for example, with Suncor, in the not-for-profit space with the municipality of Wood Buffalo, University of British Columbia, as well as the Rick Hansen Foundation. And now he's in consulting. Neil's background is really one of representative of Western Canada as well. He has lived in Winnipeg, thank you for that addition, Vancouver, Fort Mac, otherwise known as Fort McMurray, as well as now in Calgary. His experience and expertise is wide and deep in the human capital sector. I find also Neil to be a particularly grounded person, perhaps as a result of having been in the clergy for over a decade. In my prep call with Neil, I was really impressed by the deep thinking that underlies his leadership in the learning and development space. Welcome, Neil.
Wow, what an intro. Thank you. You helped my imposter syndrome significantly.
Well deserved. There's nothing imposterish about you. I know that already, Neil. So, Neil, we're going to talk about learning and development, the sort of the past, present, and future, in particular as it relates to that being in the age of AI. But before we do that, you know it, at Employee Wellbeing Council, of which you're a part, we focus on being human-centric, and I know that's really important to you as well. And so, Neil, you're human. I'm going to center on you for a little bit. And the way I'm going to do that is I'm going to ask you a couple of Proust questionnaire questions. So Marcel Proust was an essayist and author. He used to use these questions as a parlor game because he felt that the responses to these questions really helped us to understand the true nature of a person. So here we go, Neil. Ready for your first question?
I am. I love the introspection that Proust's work brings. So this is fun.
Okay, great. Which talent would you most like to have, Neil?
So many pop to mind, but I think I would land on being a polyglot, the ability to speak multiple languages fluently. So important to connect with humans around the globe. And more, I find that value in if you could think in the language, dream in the language, those kinds of things would make me a much more well-rounded person. So polyglot is what I would choose.
Neat. And if you were to die, Neil, and come back as a person or a thing, what would it be?
I agonize over this question. I've been asked before. I think I would say a guardian angel.
Well,
the ability to protect and guide people on their journeys and be able to be there in their toughest times. And also open up the art of possible and celebrate with people in a sense of wonder and fascination. A guardian angel would be a fun gig.
Amazing. And I actually think the sense of giving, which a guardian angel that you've just described, is also going to bleed into the way in which you lead your function, learning and development. I know that. So we're going to start with the first question. And so oftentimes in the past and historically, organizations really viewed learning and development as it related to what the organization needed to complete its strategy for operations, and really encouraging employees to gain those skills or the knowledge that would achieve those ends, right, of business strategy and business operations. And so now the expectations of employees have changed. So can you describe a little bit for us what are employee expectations nowadays as it relates to an employer providing learning and development?
Yeah, such a loaded question. I mean,
it's a bit loaded.
Look, I could give you the consulting answer, which is it depends. I'll give you the more direct answer. It's so linked to our relationship between employer and employee more broadly and how we think about work, how that shifted, certainly through the pandemic. We talk a lot in the firm about we can't offer anyone employment for life, but we can do is offer to make them employable. And so part of the expectation is people join organizations because they believe it's part of a career now, as opposed to once I'm in for life. So that relationship has shifted in terms of what's in it for both the employer and the employee, and how can we get, suck the blood out of both, get the best out of each during that relationship. So the expectation is no longer one size fits all from a learning perspective, personalized development, self-paced and just in time as much as possible, and being very intentional about the modalities. I think we'll probably end up talking about inclusion as part of that. And the expectation from a learning perspective is that we are looking at and thinking about all the potential modalities and that the breadth and depth of learning is matching the space that they're in for the career spot that they're in. And everyone wants to go faster. Most people would like to join an organization where their parents left off from a monetary perspective. But there's a lot of experience and exposure that's required, not just education.
Right. And so really it comes down to what you've described also, the changing nature of the employment contract, right? And looking at it as a win-win for both parties. What's the win for the organization? What's the win for the employee? And learning and development plays a critical role in that win for the employee now.
I think it's a huge part of the value proposition. In terms of, while I'm here, will I develop and grow in my career and my expertise, skills? If an organization can offer that, it's worth a lot in the long view of your career, for sure.
That's right. And so that really does then translate also into the leadership and what leaders need to do to create a learning environment. And so how do you move beyond also everyone thinking that learning is going to be a one-day training course? And so, and leaders sometimes believe that too. I'll just send them on a training course and they'll be done, right? So how do we, whether online or in person, what do leaders need to do?
Yeah, I think there's the easy answer, which is creating the time and space for their people to get. And then I think leaders need to lead the way, and ironically, in terms of modeling their own development and their own lifelong learning, modeling what that looks and feels like at all levels throughout the organization. So if you look up and see your leader not investing in their own development and not putting time and space in the prioritization of that, it sends a pretty clear message around what that looks like throughout the organization. So I think leaders showing what that looks like all the way through, and then the support. I talk about, for example, what if you as a leader, 30 seconds after one of your employees came back from a learning experience, and just ask them, what's the one thing you took away and how can I help you apply that? Because the biggest challenge people have in learning is not getting the knowledge, it's the application of that in their current state. Oftentimes people go to learning inspired, love what they see, and then they go back to their job and they can't actually do what they've learned because they have no application. So leaders being there to help them clear the way, remove obstacles so that they can actually apply what they've learned would be the number one thing.
That's a terrific tip. And at the end of the program, I'll be asking you for specific tips, but you've really already given one, which is the application piece. I think both you and I are old enough to remember when binders were handed out on courses, right? And so you'd walk into somebody's office and there'd be a whole row of binders of all the programs they'd gone on. But, you know, how much of that was actually applied? Because you get really busy and you go back to, particular if it's about habit forming, you just go default back to what you always did, right? And so that's important. And the other piece that I really appreciated that you just drew out is about modeling. And so it's been a consistent theme in some of the areas that we've spoken to leaders about is really modeling learning yourself, or in other conversations, we've talked about modeling being vulnerable, talking about your own mental health, but modeling is critical, right? And that's, I think, drives the difference between a leader and sort of an administrator or manager as well.
Yeah, leadership. And so it's an important thing. Leadership there's do things and be things. And oftentimes we get very focused on teaching leaders that do things. So, what are the four things I can do? And I get it from a practicality perspective. However, many of the, just the nature of the plethora of things that come at leaders today, you really have to anchor on what are those things? What are the things that just come out of your DNA that people sense this is who you are? This is not, you're not doing it for check marks. You're not doing it to impress your employees. You're doing it because this is who you are. Those things send far stronger messages than sometimes the do things, which, you know, we're doing the right things, but the why is often questioned. So when it comes to learning, I think you really have to examine your own growth mindset and your why, and then live that, and people pick up. Like, our employees are, and people are so attuned to smell when something is being done, who they are versus because someone's told them they should.
Right, right. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit here and ask you a bit more technical question, let's say, in the L&D space. And so micro-learning, because again, you know, I mentioned about sending somebody on a one-day course. I mean, once upon a time, that you would have been a two-day or three-day or full week sort of learning. And so for our listeners, can you explain a little bit what micro-learning is and how have you seen organizations use that effectively?
Yeah, and some of my CLO peers might take offense to what I'm about to say, but I think so micro-learning, the spirit of micro-learning is to get the Einstein principle of if you can explain something in 30 seconds or less, you understand. If you take, there's that philosophy, and then there's the other philosophy, the things around, I would have shortened this PowerPoint presentation, but I didn't have enough time, of really being able to distill complex things down into short, punchy learning moments, just in time, available to be accessed in the flow of work, as opposed to having to go to a course. So micro learning is those nuggets just when you need them. I love the example. For example, you join an organization and you just want to learn how do I buy a pencil, and then you click on the learning and it's telling you about the history of pencils, about the history of supply chain and how supply chain works. You're like, I just need to know, where is the button to buy a pencil and how do I get it done, right? So if micro-learning gets at what are people really looking for and tries to give them that in that moment. The downside of micro-learning and what we see on the TikTok sort of generation of things is that everything that you learn shouldn't be in a micro spot. And some things just need depth. Sometimes the dive into the research paper and just absorb all the data and all, and you cannot do that in 30 seconds. And so I've conditioned our team not to talk about those micro moments as actually learning. They're an introduction to a concept to try to pique interest, almost like an advertisement or a trailer for the real depth in any given area. It has its moment in time, but let's not make it all learning by any stretch. You're not doing leadership training through micro-learning. It takes depth.
Super interesting. And I think that push-pull or that tension is probably also driven from top-down as well as bottom-up. And then in the age of AI, and we're going to get to that in a moment, right, where everything can happen within microseconds. But is that, to what degree is that deep learning or is that instilled learning versus surface learning? So we've had, speaking of being online as well, would you like to just continue on that?
Yeah, my apologies. I actually believe I and my peers in learning have an accountability to our businesses, communities, and our people to hold the line on what is, when can we actually go quick and dirty, and when do we truly get the depth and breadth of what's important, like reading a book and really spending time on the concepts. That is so powerful and will pay off for years and years to come versus the quick hit in the Coles notes. What do I need to answer the exact question? You may or may not recall some of those core concepts years down the road, and they won't actually change you and your ability to develop capabilities longer term. So knowing the difference, I think, is where the real wisdom in learning comes. And it's important that we don't lose that skill set. As we transition to the conversation about online, the same thing. knowing which modality is best for which topic.
Right. So, Neil, as I said in my introduction of you, your depth of thinking underlying learning is remarkable. And I know others probably have the same level of depth, but it's a pleasure to talk to you about it, because I think that there's real intentionality behind how you lead your function and a sense of integrity. As you said, hold the line, right? There's sort of a bit of a sense of integrity as it relates to learning and the evolution of learning within not just your organization, but in general.
I'm very grateful for the role that I have. I take great gratitude in being able to watch people's potential unlocked and find that there's no greater calling in some ways to be able to be part of that for the next generation and for this generation to continue to improve themselves. I don't take that lightly.
Right, certainly. And so you had mentioned online, or perhaps even I had mentioned online. And so we're talking about modalities, and this is maybe a really good segue into the role of online training, right? I mean, it's been around for a very long time, but certainly during the pandemic, we saw a seismic shift as a result of that. And so talk to me about online learning pre-pandemic, post-pandemic. What does it look like now? Where is that role?
Yeah. So when you can't gather in person, everything goes, again, you choose the modality you have available to you. So online became the mechanism by which we conveyed most learning. And I would say, look, to mixed results, I think it democratized learning across. So in my case, where we've got a national organization, global organization, being able to travel around, it limited pre-pandemic who was able to be, and almost was reserved for the elite, as opposed to now being able to make it available to all where it makes sense. Having said that, post-pandemic, I would be so bold as to declare that e-learning's kind of now like the VHS of L&D. You can still use it, but the real power is not in the traditional e-learning modules that are there. Micro-learning, as I said, has its place. So does e-learning. But now with the emergence of things like XR and VR experiences, where they're truly immersive, those are online learning, but they're not e-learning in the traditional sense that we have. Lots of experience, examples of what that looks like, that, and the power of that. And the neuroscience of immersive learning that way, where your brain actually believes it's in that experience, and therefore the learning is experiential, and 4x retention over an e-learning where you're watching something. In our own firm, we have a lot of regulatory training that's done through e-learnings. And we have lots of evidence people finding ways to try. And we obviously curate and moderate, but try to just get through them, checkbox activity, rather than really being invested in learning something. So they become, yes, I completed it, I get the certificate, check, versus actually developing new capabilities and skills. And so we're shifting away from using that as the mechanism by which further important skills, and using e-learning for things where it's more of a communications tool than a learning tool, if I could put it that way.
Sure, it becomes compliance in some ways, right? Compliance driven rather than true learning. And so you use it.
We're learning a lot about the neuroscience. So we're partnering with a group, Dr. Paul Zak, who's developed, his company's called Immersion, and they've developed the ability using smartwatches to tell during an experience when dopamine and oxytocin fire at the same time, and the power that that has on writing things on the supercomputer instead of the floppy disk. And e-learning rarely fires that. It can be done, but it's very difficult to do versus in-person or virtual VR experiences where you can actually program that to happen. Now, it sounds a bit manipulative, but it gives people an experience that actually is retained and recallable from a supercomputer, your brain, versus a floppy disk that gets written during.
every 30 minutes.
Great analogies. And you used the term that I'm not sure I'm familiar with. I know VR, but did you also use the term XR?
Yeah, extended reality. So it's encourage anyone who's listening to look it up, but it beyond even the virtual spaces. So it's bringing in all of the senses, including smell, taste.
Oh, wow.
Truly to get at how do we build experiences where people really remember. It's the use of music. So we're using music. Imagine a world where I could, in a room, use 30 seconds of music to align everyone's brainwave, move them from beta to gamma, and then deliver. So
wait,
the panacea for facilitators is that everyone on the same brainwave. And they, well, now we can do that using music through EEG and other measures. We've been able to watch on the screen all everyone's brainwaves align, and then we can deliver. And it's people love seeing it, but also experiencing it in a Murkoff way. So these are things now that open up for us the ability to use learning very differently than we have before, which is in-person RE. It's now much more broadly expanding our modalities.
Absolutely. And so we are talking about the future of learning, which to me also would include, right, the role of AI in learning. And so I read an interesting article about generative AI curating individual learning plans as per, you know, the employees, I think, performance plan, career development conversations, resume, and all of those things, I assume. So, and you would also have to have very robust talent management practices, I think, in order for that to work. So how will AI affect learning, do you think?
The panacea of learning right now is deep personalization. So one size doesn't fit all. Gen AI really does, to your point, able to take your LinkedIn profile, the work that you've done within a company, your performance management review, like all of these components, and personalize real time. You know, if you do something, then it's actually adjusted like a Netflix. When you enjoyed this, you might like that kind of an experience for learning. So that deep personalization is one component of that, serving up content in real time and constantly adjusting and improving and being better informed. I think the linking of performance data to development is so important. And to your point, it's an ecosystem. So learning becoming part of an ecosystem that Gen AI is able to scrape from is a key component to make this very successful. Obviously, the ability to generate content faster. I'm not sure yet if it's better. It really does depend on the skill set of the designers. But I think using the tools in Gen AI certainly cuts down the time to prototype, for example. So we can very quickly get to what would a learning look like and feel like and tweak it, where before that would be a 3-week build. Now it's a 3-hour build by using some of these tools. Intelligent tutoring is another thing. So in real time, being able to monitor what you're involved in and be able to give you feedback. I see you're struggling on such a task or that, and giving you immediate feedback. Now, there's a lot of pushback on monitoring for obvious reasons, but it's the technology is available. And then the last thing is the data insights and analysis. A ton of data being collected about our learners and what they're interested in and what they're learning. Analyzing that data takes a ton of horsepower, manpower, person power. Now it's able to be done through Gen AI and quickly serving up insights that we can then choose to use or retool. So the one thing about Gen AI that I would say from a learning perspective is never losing sight of the fact that it's about human connect. Learning is so much about the human connection and human to human. And while machines can be a teammate to help us, I never wanted to get in between and become, reduce our human-centric approach to how we develop our people and how we think about it. So anytime we offer tech skill training, we also offer enduring human capability skills to make sure that our tech skills never outstrip our human skills.
And yeah, that we don't lose sight of. I was just thinking when you're talking about that intelligent tutoring, I think mine would constantly pop up on how to manage your inbox more effectively. I've had people be horrified at the state of my inbox. So I think that would be the one that would pop up. One of the many things perhaps that would pop up frequently. But coming back to that human, I mean, you're leading, sort of segueing again into the next question, that not losing the human connection and recognizing the need to focus on the human. And also talk to me a little bit of my next question is, you know, is going to be about inclusion. And so at the council, we always want to focus and share that there's inclusion throughout. And in particular, as we're in this age of AI, not losing sight of not only the human, but the differences between humans. And I think that can, we need to stay on top of that. So talk to me about inclusion and in learning, which we've always generally has been a theme or more and more over the years. But now as we also add in AI, how do we do that?
Yeah, and so I'll offer up some thoughts. I mean, the how do we do that is I can't be definitive yet. So we're in so again, personalization includes the full spectrum of a whole person development, not just developing better employees, but actually helping be part of developing people more broadly. And the personalization and democratization of making that available to all. That means getting into things like, making sure that accessibility and universal design are being considered for all of our programs, whether it's multiple formats, audio, video, text, making those available to all, making sure we have closed captioning, we have font size options, that people have readers, screen readers, that all of these things are available in in-person accommodations when we have in-person learning. I also think, we launched something called Beyond, which is the intent of that is that whole person development. So chef school, mechanics class, improv classes. These are meant to tap into things that people are passionate about that don't necessarily have a direct relationship to how you are at work, but they make you a better human. Your ability to actually invest in yourself. We found tremendous correlation between those that invest there and the completion of their regulatory requirement learning, because their growth mindset goes up, and therefore it translates over to the other things that they can learn at Deloitte. So it's fascinating to see how, if we think about whole person development, it actually makes us better. All of this is undergirded by three sort of a philosophy of we're helping people with their being, their belonging, and their becoming. And so from a learning perspective, I mentioned earlier, yes, education is part of that, but so is exposure to new ideas, new concepts, new ways of thinking, so divergent thinking components. And then the experiences that they have are where most people develop the capabilities and skills. So my role is very much involved in the curation of all of those, the experiences, the exposure, and the learning and education component of that, so that you have a full spectrum. And everyone thrives in different ways and learns different ways through those three. So making sure you're not getting into one trick pony, one size fits all, and that everyone is thought and continuously learning from your learners, what would make this better, easier to digest, et cetera. It's an ever-evolving dynamic process.
So I just noted two things down because I wanted to refer to that in what you've said. I think also greater inclusion or greater equity through that democratization, right? So using AI allows, and that individual learning plan may now expose those who historically have not maybe had access to or been identified as, right, capable of sort of next steps. And so this greater exposure, right, that also, I think, is can as long as we do it right, can certainly lead to greater exposure for a greater variety of people.
We've anchored our learning philosophy on two human generative drives. One is agency. So lots is available to you and you can choose. right? That you have some choice in that. Like, the firm can give you the why certain things are important, but you have choice. The second is gratitude. And that if you anchor learning in an attitude of gratitude, it changes the way that you make choices, that you invest yourself. And we know you get in what you put out, you get out what you put in. So giving everyone the opportunity to put in enables them to get back from the organization. And where we started around expectations, that's a big part of it, is people want to have the opportunity to shape their journey a little bit as opposed to having it handed to them, whether it's by Gen AI or by leadership. The ability to shape and tool that themselves is so important.
Yeah, absolutely. The agency piece I can certainly see, because again, in the old school world, you were told what to learn, right? And you were directed really in what to learn. So you
there are still some things we need to tell.
Right. Fair enough. It's not all just cooking classes is what you're saying.
Yeah. And some of it is like leadership, the balance between authority and influence. The ask is for leaders to influence, not to you have to. So we have very few. In fact, right now we have two required mandatory courses. That's it. In a firm that's quite regulatory, right? In its expectation, all the others are done through influence and highly recommended, and you will be more successful. And versus you shall. And the world had shifted the demographic of being able to say, because I said so.
Doesn't apply.
Not many are resonating with that, I think. In fact, your leadership will be done.
That's it. Antiquated. I'd like to move on to a couple of practical tips. So we always want to leave leaders who are listening with very practical advice towards the end of the podcast. What is the one thing or two that I am going to do today that is going to help me in within the learning or supporting learning that's going to help me build a high-performing team?
So I'll tie back to what I said earlier about that 30 seconds. Know what your people are learning and tap in and ask the quick question of, how can I help you apply? That goes so far in the learning culture, for sure. The second thing I would say is leaders could do a better job of storytelling, both their own stories and how they're learning and what they're learning and developing, but also their team's story around what their team is focused on and building and the why for that. If leaders got good at storytelling, it taps into personal sense of why and purpose, meaning in work, meaning in the work. There's nothing more valuable for a leader to be able to do than connect the purpose of the work to the bigger why and how this is adding value at all levels through the organization. And we all get attracted to that sexy sort of the purpose that's saving the world, but sometimes it's very practical and meaningful to a small group of people when you can tell the story of how this matters. You know, the seashell thrown in the ocean kind of construct, that matters a lot to our people, and the experience, the sense of well-being at work is very much tied to the ability of leaders to tell those stories in an effective way.
Great. Yeah, the telling the why really does link to well-being, doesn't it? Because if I know why I'm doing what I'm doing, I feel better about what I'm doing. I know why I'm doing it, and probably has effects on neuroscience that you would be able to recount far better than I. So as we move towards the end of this podcast, Neil, I have a couple more Proust questions if you will indulge me. So if you could change one thing about yourself, Neil, what would it be?
I would say, so this has been a journey for a long time. I would to connect the words I'm hearing to what is actually intended, and to hear intent and hear truly the emotion and everything that's around it versus hearing the words. So it's one part active listening and it's one part being able to truly understand. And so I think if I could change one thing, it would be the ability to make that connection in a much, much simpler way.
the sender receiver model, right? Hearing it the way it was sent.
Yeah.
And who are you? Who are the heroes in real life for you? Who are your heroes?
That's an easy one. I would start with Dad. My dad, master craftsman carpenter, deep insight though on business and things. He, one of the best experiences I had, I was an apprentice with him in carpentry early in my career. And for about 3 weeks, I was working on the job as a carpenter. And he would not give me a hammer. This was before we had electric tools. I was really frustrated. Like, when do I actually get to build something? And so when he finally handed me the hammer, he did so with this. He said, this hammer is a tool that can be used to build or destroy. In the hands of a master craftsman, it builds beautiful homes for people to live in and shelter. In the hands of a hack, it takes down barns and other things, right? So you can actually do a lot of damage with this tool. So I'm not handing you this until you're ready to be the builder, not the destroyer. And a play out of that over and over and over again, Gen AI is a tool. It can be used to build or it can be used to do a lot of damage. And that continuously informs. And so he is one of my heroes. And the second one that I want to call out would be my mom passed away a couple of years ago. And I got to witness palliative care, those that provide palliative care in the last days of her life. Extraordinary humans who treated us as family and took such good care of both mom and us. And they do it, you know, and then the bed was cleared and the next family comes in. We felt like so taken well care of. That to me, they're heroes to do that over and over and over again and make everyone feel and truly be taken well care of is to me where the true heroes sit. So palliative care nurses, palliative care, you know, the administrators that do all of that heavy lifting to take care of those that are in their last days, they're heroes to me.
Absolutely. Your father was a very wise man, and I can see where the wisdom has cascaded down, Neil. And absolutely agree with you with the palliative folks. I've had both parents in their hands, and they're the most incredible human beings. On behalf of the Employee Wellbeing Council, Neil, I'd like to thank you tremendously for sharing your insights and for giving us your time today. Really interesting and fascinating conversation. I feel like I could keep going, but alas, we must end and say adieu.
Thank you. Can I share one more thought? The tie for learning and well-being is so powerful. In fact, I think learning is well-being. That as humans, we're actually innately designed to grow and to develop. And that's part of our existence. And so leaning into that in our toughest times, it's gotten me through a lot. People ask, what is it that you do when you're in tough times? I go and try and learn something new continuously. Feeding myself and my existence with something new. So the tie for learning and well-being is so tightly for me, and it's an honor to be part of the council in that way. So big thank you to all of those that are involved in it.
Thank you, Neil.
Thank you for joining us on the Wellbeing Ignites Wellbeing podcast, brought to you by OOT Social Health. We hope today's conversation has sparked new insights and inspired you to prioritize well-being in your journey to organizational success. Remember, when well-being ignites, well-doing follows. Stay tuned for more episodes as we continue to explore the power of human-centric leadership. Until then, be well and lead with purpose.